Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hungry Planet when we come back. You know, during the 1970s, an obscure black college professor at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, working on a grant, developed a unique marketing plan for agricultural products. The plan was aimed at poor, rural, black landowners in the South who owned small acreages. The goal was to keep these landowners on their land by producing produce for sale to the public at retail and to generate an income that would support a family. Well, the Whatley program was so successful that it became known as the Whatley program, how to make $100,000 per year on 25 acres or less. And that fellow's name was Professor Booker T. Whatley. Now there are more than 4,000 of these small family enterprises operating in the United States. And the law school has taken that Whatley program and added the 15 agricultural laws of the scripture and the 17 financial laws from the scripture so that you can practice all of the laws of the United States, your state, and the scripture and make a good living for you and your family at the same time. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, our $100,000 class is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the email. Or better yet, click on to the archives page. Go to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there off the archives page at georgegordon.org. All right, we picked up a book here the other day. It's called Hungry Planet, and I gave you a report on it last time. And, of course, the objective here is what can we learn from this book? How does this book add to our fund of knowledge, our understanding of the world and of the people in it, of the upcoming Great Tribulation, of law, and of subsistence and survival? How is it going to benefit me? What am I going to get from my 30 bucks after I spend it on this book? Well, here at the law school, we buy a lot of books and we review a lot. Not very many of them make the air. In fact, only about one in 20, is actually, in my view, worth reviewing. And it follows a statement in the scripture that of the writing of books, there is no end. That's what Solomon said one time. I think he said that in Ecclesiastes. He said, of the writing of books, there is no end. And there's a lot of information out there. I'm not sure that all of it's worth looking at. This particular book here, at first glance, I looked at it and I said, there isn't anything in this book that's worth reporting on. But one-third of it is. And it's that one-third of this book that I want to bring to your attention, because there's something to be learned here. There's 30 people that were interviewed around the world in a number of countries, like Japan, Italy, India, Guatemala, Greenland, Great Britain, Germany, and France. They went around the world. And they took a look at and they photographed the family with all of the food that they bought and ate in 1 week. And it's an entertaining book, and it kind of tells you, well, gee, look how the Germans live, and look how the French live, and gosh, look at these people in Poland. But that's not the lesson to be learned here. The best lesson came from a family of 15 in Mali, in Black Africa, who spent $26.39 to feed 15 people for 7 days. That's $1.75 per person per week. That's 8 cents per meal. And right away when I saw that, I said, oh, my God, how did that guy do that? Because someday I might need to know how to feed 15 people on $26. Now, in the last program, I told you, my wife has a number of recipes, and she can feed people here in America for 25 cents a meal. And I thought that was really good until I took a look at the refugees in Chad and the Chad farmer and the Mali farmer who can do it for 19 cents, 13 cents, and 8 cents. Now, there's one here that's pretty good. It's in Egypt. There's a family there of 11 being fed on 29 cents per meal. That's getting right down there. Now, it isn't too shabby if you can feed people on a dollar per meal per day. That'd be $3 a day here in the United States. That's pretty good. There's a guy here in the United States feeds his family on $1.89 a meal. That's not shabby here for the United States of America. But there's coming a period of time of famine spoken of in Bible prophecy. You remember in Deuteronomy 28, Leviticus 26, in which famine is going to be severe. And so it would be good for all of us if we knew how and what it is that we could be buying, storing, and using to feed people. Now, in looking at these people, they're all full-fleshed. There are no people here with distended stomachs and skinny rail bones, and they're starving to death. None of these people are starving. The 15 people in the family in Mali all look good. They're all dressed well. The father here has a job. He's working. He's doing his thing. Now, the key here is that several of them are farmers, and these people aren't rich. They're pretty poor by our standards. But the thing that's key here is that they're all eating. They're eating their native fare, and they're doing quite nicely on it. And when the Great Tribulation comes upon us, there's about 12 of them, I think, are going to survive it. Some of them in the cities, some of them in the villages, some of them in the countryside as farmers. Now, some of them here are just dead on arrival. So let's start off today with looking at a family in France. Then we'll take a look at a family in Germany. And these people live high on the hog. I mean, they really eat well. The food that they eat is good. It's helpful. It's nutritious. They're both of them living in the cities, working in the cities, and so on. Let's take a look. The first one here is from France. When 20-year-old Delphine Lemoine hosts a weekend dinner party for her friends, she serves the traditional French foods, subtle meat dishes, meals complete with cheese and salad courses, rich desserts, and bottles of French wine. But when her family sits down for a weeknight dinner, the fare is more global in nature and more convenience-oriented. So they come up with a number here, and they got a picture here, and there's 4 or 5 pages. I won't bore you with all of the details, but the moral to the story is they spend $419.95 a week in U.S. dollars. You'll have to compute this into your dollars, whether you live in Russia and you're going to convert this into rubles, or you want to convert this into Indian rupees or Japanese yen, wherever you live in the world, this will give you an idea. In U.S. dollars, for those of us here in the U.S. and Canada and Australia, give you a pretty good idea as to what this is going to cost for a week. Now, these people are living pretty good. $419.95 a week translates into $4.99 per meal. So you simply divide it by how many people are in the family. It's a man and his wife and 2 daughters. Both daughters are teenagers. So there's 4 in the family, and they're spending $4.99 per meal, living pretty well, living in France. Now we'll turn over here and let's take a look at the German family. The Germans live pretty well, too. There's 4 in this family, a boy and a girl, a man and his wife. And in looking at the picture in front of them, it looks like, boy, they eat a lot more. Now, they may entertain more. I don't know whether this is all that they're going to eat or if it's going to be as a part and parcel with entertainment during the week. The authors here added in the food that they grow or the food that they hunt. There's something to be said about a farmer who grows his own food, and then they translate that into, well, what's the dollar equivalent if you had to go out into the marketplace and buy it? Now, this is pretty key. If you can grow your own food, and this is what we've been advocating here at the law school for many years now, is that you should have a place where you have raised beds or a garden area with open pollinated seeds so that you can produce your own food. If you don't, then you will be depending upon the deliveries from the farmers to the truckers, to the wholesalers, to the jobbers, to Walmart, and you're in hopes that you'll have the money to spend at Walmart to buy your groceries. I'm not sure that that's going to be the way it's going to shake out. If it is, you'll probably be in pretty good condition. If it isn't, you might have something to learn here. So the guy in Germany, let's take a look at this guy. Now, he's spending $500 a week in U.S. dollars on food. Lives pretty good. If you take a look at the breakdown, grains and starchy foods, $31 a week. Dairy, $64 a week. Meat, fish, and eggs, $50 a week. Fruits, vegetables, and nuts, $78 a week. Condiments, $31. Snacks and desserts, $14. Prepared food, $66. That's right up there with fruits, vegetables, and nuts. Beverages is $70. $70 a week on beverages. They drink a lot of beer over there. And then miscellaneous is $91. And so they're taking vitamins, and their vitamin bill is pretty high. And most of what they're taking, $91 a week, is things like Centrum vitamins and supplements taken by Suzanne the children, Herbalife products, Formula One powder, Alomax, vitamin B, and a bunch of others here, Herba Lifeline, 23 pills, coenzyme Q10 plus 8 pills, and so on. So nearly $100 a week is being spent on vitamins and minerals. Now, we spend money on vitamins and minerals too, and so you should add that in to see what it costs you, you know, for your food and your expenses for the week, food and beverages. Wanted to point that out because, see, the French family over here, they're not spending anything on vitamins and minerals. And most of the other people over here, like the guy in Mali, they're not even buying Coca-Cola. Now, one of the foods that we note here that is ubiquitous to the entire world is Coca-Cola. Everybody in the world has Coca-Cola at their fingertips. And if they don't, I'm surprised. Now, many of these people are actually drinking Coca-Cola. As I'll show you here when we take a look in Mexico City, we look at the Mexico family, and they're drinking 3 gallons of Coca-Cola a week. Now, most of these people drink a little Coke, but they're not quite that indulgent. those people in Mexico City drinking 3 gallons of Coke a week are going to kill themselves first with diabetes. I doubt if they'll make it to famine. They'll probably be dead before then. But the moral to the story is that each one of these families, as you read through their story, you're going to pick up a little bit more information for your own subsistence and survival program, whatever that program may be. I know I did. In fact, I've got 12 here. I took a look at it, and there's 12 here. The guy from Greenland, Ecuador, Bhutan, Chad, China, Cuba, Egypt, Guatemala, Mali, Mongolia, the Philippines, and India. 12 of these people in here are living on diets that are perfectly nutritious, that's feeding them and keeping them in good health without vitamins and minerals, and they're doing it for less than a dollar a meal. And the champion, of course, is from Mali, M-A-L-I, little country in Africa, for 8 cents per meal. Now, if we could duplicate that here, you know, that would solve a lot of problems, because people tell me when they come to class, oh, Mr. Gordon, I could never afford this. So get your pen and paper out here, and let me show you how this is done. The Mormons are the real pioneers in subsistence and survival. So if you want to know how to do this, my advice has always been this. You do what the winners do, and you avoid what the losers do. Now, the guys that are the winners here in this country, there's two groups over here. The Amish, number one, that produce everything themselves, and they're farmers. When this thing comes to a head, the Amish are going to come through this with flying colors. They always have in the past. They have been put upon, persecuted, robbed, cheated, and just done every rotten, evil deed that you can do to people, and they just keep, like the Energizer Bunny, you know, they just keep on clicking, you know, just keep on humming along. Now, the other group over here now that are the modern champions are the Mormons. The Mormons have been waiting for an apocalyptic event now for about 150 years. And they've been preparing for it, and they're ready for it. At least they think they are. Now, I'm not sure that they are. I'm not saying that they're not. And, you know, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and we haven't got to where we're eating it yet. But these people are storing a lot of grain, which is kind of key, because it's the low-cost modality for feeding people. And that's the secret of these people in Africa. They're eating a lot of grain. Now, you need a little something to go with the grain. You know, you need some chili peppers, and you need a little oil. You know, there's some other things that you've got to have, and that you ought to have in your larder that you should be stockpiling and storing away. But I'm going to pick about eight of these families in here. I think they're going to survive this. And right at the top of the list is the guy from Ecuador. The guy from Ecuador, I think he's pretty much got this thing knocked. Now, you probably wouldn't want to live like the guy in Ecuador. I know I don't. I don't want to move to Ecuador, live up in the mountains on this little farm Teddy's got, hoeing away on my potatoes and then just barely, you know, making it by. But this guy, when it's all said and done, he and his family of eight, I think, are going to come through this and come through it pretty well. There's another guy in here. I'm going to flip over here a couple of pages. That lives in Greenland. He's an Eskimo. And let's see if I got this right here. The Germans, that's number one here. I guess the Britons come next. And then, yeah, here comes the Greenlander guy. Let me show you what this guy in Greenland has done. The guy in Greenland lives on $277.12 a week, but the local value of the hunted meat is $221.26. If you were to strip out from this Eskimo in Greenland what he provides for himself and just take away the cheese whiz and the ketchup, I think this guy's going to make it. And at first glance, when I looked at it, I said, I think this guy is chump change like all the rest of them. But when I got down here to the bottom, there's two little asterisks down here. And it says the local value of the hunted meat is $221.26. When you subtract out the $221.26 from the $277.12, all of a sudden, this guy doesn't have near as big a problem as we thought he had. $277.12. And we'll take away $221.26. He's living on $55.86 a week. And there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them in the family. So let's just write down 55, 86 a week. Then let's divide that by 5. And that's $11.17 each. Now let's divide that by 21. And he's feeding his family for 53 cents a meal. And he's feeding them on walrus, narwhal, polar bear, and seal. That's their basic diet. They're called the Madsen family in their living room in Cap Hope Village, Greenland, with a week's worth of food. Standing by the TV are Emil Madsen, 40, Erica Madsen, 26, that's his wife, with their children, Martin, Belessa, and Abraham. Their cooking method is a gas stove. Their food preservation is a refrigerator freezer. They live in a little frame house, living on the seacoast of Greenland, and hunting for the past. And when you read this guy's story, you know it's 4 or 5 pages of material here. This guy goes out with his boat, shoots a seal, brings it in, and here's his wife. Here's a picture of his wife here. skinning and gutting the seal in the hallway of their little house. She's right here. The main supply center for 900 miles in any direction is a little store. It's run by the Danish government. And this store over here furnishes these people with all of their extraneous goods. And these people are getting in the habit of eating Cheese Whiz and ketchup and all kinds of neat stuff over here. For instance, grains and starchy foods. They've got two loaves of brown bread, high-class white rice, 2.2 pounds, cereal, 2.1 pounds, hard biscuits, 1.5 pounds, and hard bread, and a bunch of other stuff here, Quaker oats, cornmeal, mashed potato mix, white bread rolls. Dairy, they have a Rinco milk powdered, 4.4 pounds of powdered milk. It makes 1.9 gallons. And then they've got Lurpak butter, 13.2 ounces a week. So meat, fish, and eggs. Musk ox, 26.5 pounds. Walrus, frozen, 9.9 pounds. Arctic geese, 8.8 pounds. After cleaning the polar bear, 3.3 pounds. Tulip hot dogs, 3 pounds. Now they've got a little asterisk here. And then down at the bottom, they take out the local value of the hunted meat, or the farm goods, you know, that these people are growing themselves, so that you can get a dollar value. But see, this guy here, he lives away from the major metropolitan areas. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to survive this. You know, he could get nuked. He could have a volcano, you know, snuff him out. He could have radiation poisoning or something like that. Hell, he might even have an oil spill come his way like we see down in the Gulf. You never can tell what's going to happen. But if these people up in Greenland just left alone, just doing what Eskimos have been doing for thousands of years, this guy is probably going to make it. And when you read through his story over here, it's going to give you some ideas. And that's the point of our program. That's the point of the Law Hour. What can we learn from this guy that we can tuck away in our heart that may at some point in the future come into play, come into value? Kind of like Reader's Digest, you know, they'll have a series of stories about, not a series, but a story about every month that deals with some guy that gets into a jam. Gets into a life and death circumstance. And his airplane crashes at the 13,000 foot mark or someplace, you know, in the Rockies or the Himalayas or someplace. And he's up there by himself with a broken leg. And what's he going to do to save himself? And here's what he does, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, where, you know, the average Joe Sixpack would say, you know, he can just pack it in, he's done for. And now that you're having read the story, you know, you and I, the Joe Sixpacks, could say, you know, if that were to happen to me, I think I could probably do the same thing. Now that somebody gave me the idea, now that somebody told me, well, it isn't impossible, it could be done. Now, I don't want to go to Greenland, and I don't want to live on polar bear and Canada geese and walrus and seal, but the moral to the story is that these people have been doing this for a good long time. Now, the Danish government comes in here, so, and they subsidize these natives up there. They actually give them, I think they give a number in here, I think it's $6,000-some-odd a year, just, you know, free, gratis, just here's your check, kind of like we do the Native American Indians here in this country, just hand them a check and tell them, hey, go out and spend this. And so they do. But this guy, his basic business in life is hunting. And he goes out and he hunts, and he sells the stuff that he hunts. See, what he's got here, his local value for this polar bear and the seal meat and the walrus meat and so on is $221 a week. So this guy produces for himself 221.26 times 52, assuming he can do this all year long. 221.26 times 52 would be... my little machine over here seems to have gone correct. 221.26 times 52 would be $11,505 a year. So this guy can make $11,000 a year just hunting if he did what he did this week that's in this story. If he just repeated that every week, you know, and went out in the local market and sold that polar bear meat and seal meat and so on, he could make his living. And evidently that's what this guy does. So I put him on the list, and I said, this guy can survive the Great Tribulation. Now, keep in mind, there's some numbers here for you. According to Isaiah 6, verse 13, Isaiah chapter 6, verse 13, the creator of the universe says, I'm going to keep one-tenth of you people alive for seed stock. And so there's one half of the equation. The other half of the equation is the New World Order gang, sponsored here by the Club of Rome. They say that they want to reduce the Earth's population by 90%. By the year 2050. Now, that's just 40 years away. 2050. They want to reduce it 90%. All of the authorities are in agreement. God, the New World Order, Club of Rome, Trilateral Commission, all these big think tanks, that there's only going to be one person in 10 left alive on planet Earth in 40 years. Everybody's in agreement. Little Georgie Gordon sitting over here saying, uh-oh, that doesn't bode well for me. Although I'm 70 years old, It's not likely that I need to be concerned over the next 40 years, but most of you people listening to me do. All of you people 40 years old now, over the next 40 years will take you up to age 80, and there's a good possibility that you could live to be age 80. So if you're age 40 or less, this is for you. You need this book. If you're 50 or 60 years old, you know, you might sit there and say, well, I'm probably not going to live long enough to worry about it one way or the other, but you might want to tuck this one away in your heart. This thing might not last 40 more years. It might only last 10 or 20. So it might raise the age limit here, maybe up to 60. Even an old guy like me, you know, might learn a little. So I did. So I'm recommending the book. It's about a 1 in 20 book. We read a lot of books here. One-third of this book is what you're looking for. The rest of it's entertaining, and it's educational. But there isn't anything that I could learn from the German or the Frenchman that would save my life in a pinch. I learned a lot about how to live high on the hog. I can see that. But I'm not really sure that they've got a whole lot there that's going to save my bacon in a pinch. But this Eskimo does. And the guy from Mali does, and the guy from Ecuador does. And those stories that are in here, when you tuck those away in your heart, could make the difference between living or dying. Could. So let me give you the name and number of the book again. This book is written, 2005 is when they published it. The author's name here is Manziel. His name is Peter Manziel, M-E-N-Z-E-L. And he had a co-author, Faith D. Alluzio, spelled D hyphen D apostrophe, A-L-U-I-S-I-O, Alluzio, Faith D. Alluzio. And I would imagine, I didn't get a price on the book, but I'd guess it came from Barnes & Noble, and it looks like about a $30 book, unless it was on special and they were trying to dump it and get rid of it because nobody wanted to buy it. And since it said Hungry Planet on it, my wife, when she goes into the Barnes & Noble store, which she does about once a month, and brings me back a big stack of books, you know, 10, 15 books at a time, and then we plow through these books, and I looked at this one, and I said, this one does not look like there's much here to report on. When I got into it, I says, hey, wait a minute, look at this guy here. So let me take a break here and give you a mid-course reminder, and then we're going to come back and take a look at the guy from Ecuador. I'm going to tell you about a little farmer over here. He's got about 7 or 8 kids, lives up in the mountains of Ecuador, and my prediction is this guy is going to come through with flying colors. Let's see if we can learn something from him. Now, you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by pre-arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page and download it right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, the beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, back to Hungry Planet. As I mentioned earlier, the people that are being interviewed here, being profiled, are all fat, happy, and sassy. None of them are skinny. None of them are in any kind of, ill health. They all look good. Every picture of every culture, every family here, they're looking great. I want to tell you about the a guy here from Ecuador, and I got Guatemala here. Let me find this one quickly. It's Ecuador. 38 cents a day, the Ecuador guy. Let's see what I've got here for Ecuador. Here we go. Ecuador, page 106. Let me back up here, page 106. Here we go. Now, these people down here live up in the high Andes Mountains. Talk about a tough place to make it. They've got pictures of this guy. There's 11 of them in the family. He's a man and his wife, and they're living in what looks like here, just describing it for you. It looks like brick, but it's probably adobe brick. They're inside their house, and they've got all their food for the week stacked up in front of them. They got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 sacks. These people eat mainly grains. They've got bananas here. Now, these aren't bananas. They're called something else, and I forgot the name of them now. They look like bananas, but they're something else, and people all over the world eat them. Once in a while, we see them here in our supermarkets. If I think of the name here, I'll tell you what it is. They've got some greens, got some carrots. They've got potatoes. One of these big sacks over here is potatoes. My guess is that this family of 11 is going to eat about 50 pounds of potatoes this week. They've got a sack of rice, it looks like, over here, and they're going to eat about, oh, I'm guessing 50 pounds of rice. Probably 50 pounds of rice, 50 pounds of potatoes. Oh, wait a minute. Take that back. There's two sacks of potatoes here. These people are going to eat 100 pounds of potatoes in a week. Probably 50 pounds of rice, and then this other bag over here, I can't tell what's in it. And then they've got all the rest of this food over here, too. Now, remember, there's 11 people here, and they're going to eat for 38 cents a meal. 38 cents a meal, going to feed 11 people. This guy's name is Pobre Pero Sana, and it's no surprise that our Melinda would rather leave her children at home in Tingo, their small village in the central Andean highlands, than bring them down the mountain to the weekly market in the much bigger town of Simitag. Her youngest children especially want everything they see, and she has little money for extras. The four-year-old, Alvarito, is the most troublesome, she says, but he can't be left behind without an argument. It's difficult to imagine anyone arguing with the authoritarian Armelinda until we met Alvarito, with 8 children to raise, including the baby riding in a sling on her back, plus doing the field work, tending a flock of sheep, cooking, doing the laundry and the marketing, as well as practicing midwifery and medicinal healing. Irma Linda doesn't have much time to indulge the children. Her husband, Orlando Ime, who also goes to market, turns out to be the go-to guy for parental largesse. Usually, Alvarito gets to go shopping, even without the patter of little feet. The Ime's food forays aren't easy. There are no shops or markets in Tingo, only neighbors and family to borrow from and share with. The hike down the mountain from Tingo to Simitag is 3 miles long. Then there's the vertical walk back. Although Ecuador is situated on the equator and the growing season is long, the Ayem family's fields are 11,000 feet up in the mountains, far removed from the rich tropical lowlands. Our land is dry and the wind is harsh, says Orlando, so it's not that good for planting. The land further down is much more fertile, but it's too expensive. And despite the difficult climate, they manage to live through most of the year on what they grow in their fields: potatoes, a root vegetable, corn, wheat, broad beans and onions. The only animal protein that they eat is guinea pig and chicken, and that only a few times a year. They have a milk cow that produces about 1 quart a day. Food security comes in the form of their other enterprise, their flock of 50 sheep, which the Ayems own jointly with their extended family. They raise the animals not for food, but to sell in the market, to tide them over during the dry season when there's little or nothing to harvest. In addition, Orlando is the Tingo representative to the National Political Party, named after a legendary Inca emperor. He makes $50 a month for the work, but $15 of that pays the rent on the small room in Simitag where he stays when he's doing community business. The remaining $35 helps, but it doesn't go very far with a family of 10. Money has been especially tight since about the year 2000, when Ecuador, trying to hold back exploding inflation, adopted the U.S. dollar as the national currency. The move slowed inflation, but prices escalated as vendors took advantage of the switch and the ensuing confusion to round off prices to the nearest dollar. Suddenly, many small purchases cost at least a dollar, not a trifling amount considering that more than 4 out of 10 Ecuadorians live on less than $2 a day. Now, let's pause here and think about this for a second. I got some numbers in here to kind of shock you. 1/2 of Earth's population live on $5 a day or less, and 1 billion people in the world, that's 1/6 or 1/7, depending upon how many we got now, are living on $2 a day. So, for Ecuadorians, that doesn't say that this family is living on $4 a day. They've got sheep, and they've got this $50 a month income. That's $600 a year. So they're probably doing a little better than the average Joe six-pack. But the moral of the story is 40% of the people in Ecuador are living on $2 a day. Now you're sitting there saying, well, yeah, that's $2 a day in their money. Not isn't. We've got globalization. This globalization has been especially hard on poor people. When you're growing rice in Burma, and the price of rice is 30 cents a pound in San Francisco, the guy that's growing the rice in Burma is going to sell his rice in the marketplace to get 30 cents a pound in San Francisco before he sells it for 15 cents a pound in Burma. Now, it is true, before globalization took over, that food products and local products were priced in the local currency. But once globalization took root, it didn't help with people's poverty. It exacerbated their poverty. And that's why here in the United States, we have all of this great influx of Mexicans coming in here. See, they were making $9 a day, average Mexican, making $9 a day, prior to the NAFTA treaty. After the NAFTA treaty, the per capita income in Mexico went down from $9 a day to $5 a day. And they can't make it on $5 a day, so they're fleeing to the United States to see what they can do to beef up their income. So we Yankees up here are kind of the proximate cause of our own injury when it comes to this illegal immigration. So tuck that one away in your heart. Now, these people around the world living on $2 a day, boys and girls, picture yourself being reduced to $2 a day. What would you buy to feed your family? What would you do in your backyard? Which is why this week I thought I would bring to your attention this $100,000 class, because Professor Whatley took up this challenge about 25 years ago. Well, maybe more than that. I met him 25 years ago, and he was an old man then. And he's a black man, and he was from Alabama, I believe it was. And he said, you know, what can poor black families in Alabama do in this modern technological society? And in addition to that, the farms are tending for bigger and bigger, not smaller and smaller. So what do you do when you got 20 acres or 25 acres in Alabama and you're poor and you're black? And he said, well, we got to come up with a better plan. And he did. And not only was his plan better, it was dynamite. It was a tremendous plan. Now, Whatley never did practice the scriptural laws. He didn't practice land Sabbaths and Jubilees. He didn't tithe. He believed in evolution. He didn't believe in God. And if he did, it wasn't the God of the Bible. It was somebody else. He was in favor of all the government handouts. He didn't have any qualms about using chemical fertilizer. But he developed a marketing plan and a strategy. And that was crucial. Then I came along and I said, you know, we can't use this Whatley program unless we practice the land Sabbaths, the Jubilees, the health laws, and the economic laws of the scripture. So we sat down and we said, okay, now how can we meld these together so that we can obey God, keep his commandments, and make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less, and we can do it. But let's suppose that we get reduced like this family in Ecuador, living at 11,000 feet on poor land, which is, it's a tough dirt scrabble proposition. So they've got pictures in here of this guy, he's outgrowing his own potatoes. Now, I don't know how much of their food they grow. Let's back up here a little bit. Maybe they give us an answer here. Put on my glasses here. Market value for homegrown food, if purchased, $3.20. Okay. The homegrown food here that they produce, if they were to take $3.20 off of the $31.55 for the week, we would have another $3.20 off of this. And they gave us, you know, $31.55, which is the market value. Now, this guy's got a picture in here, and he and his wife, they're out hoeing their own potatoes. Here they are in their potato patch. Cultivating potatoes on a windy afternoon, our Melinda wraps her baby in two shawls tied in different directions. When she and Orlando arrived at the field, a 10-minute walk from their home, they said a quick prayer to some god here, Mother Earth, before working the land. Occasionally, our Melinda has to adjust the baby's position, but generally she has no problem carrying her tiny passenger. Now, this lady is out here. She's got a baby, and she's taking that baby with her on her back while she's working the potato patch. Evidently, she doesn't think about the biggest kid that they've got here, just looking at their family. I'm going to guess here that they got a girl here that might be 8, and they might have a boy here that's either 8 or 10. All of them are pretty dinky kids. So they probably don't have someone that could take, you know, the two older kids can probably look after the 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old kids. Now, this one boy might be 10, the girl might be 8, maybe she's 10. Then they've got 1, 2, 3, 4 others, and then there's the baby. All right, so now tuck that one away in your heart. These people are making it, and they look good. I mean, they're eating good, the food that they've got in front of them over here. You know, potatoes, rice, beans, and they're doing all right. Let me just back up here. Grains and starchy food, $17.40. They got 100 pounds of white potatoes. Rice, 50 pounds of rice. Hey, I guessed that pretty close, didn't I? Ground wheat, 15 pounds. They grew that themselves. Corn flour, 10 pounds. White flour, fine, 10 pounds. Green pea flour, 8 pounds of white flour, and They normally grow their own potatoes and corn, but have none to harvest at this time of year. They have eaten the last of their homegrown barley. Okay, now dairy, 1.8 gallons from the family cows. Only part of the week's supply is shown in the photograph. Meat, fish, and eggs, none. Fruits and vegetables, plantains. That's what those banana-looking things are. They're called plantains. 13.4 pounds of yellow banana, 6.2 pounds. And so there's bananas there and plantains. Purchased overripe as they're cheaper that way. So she buys rotten bananas because that way they're cheaper. Oranges, 3.6 pounds. Lemons, 2.5 pounds. Andean blackberries, 10 pounds of carrots, 3.6 pounds of red onions, 3 pounds of leeks, 2 pounds of lettuce. Condiments, $2.90. Brown sugar, purchased as a cake for sweetening coffee, eaten as candy. Salt, 1.5 pounds. Vegetable oil, 16.9 fluid ounces. Cilantro, one bunch. Beverages, they drink stinging nettle, one small bunch, gathered wild for tea. Corn silk, one handful, boiled in water for both tea and medicine. Water from a nearby spring carried by hand for drinking and cooking. Food expenditures for the week, $31.55. All right, there's a story in here that's worth, this story just on this one family in here, which is about, I don't know, maybe 10 pages long, is worth the price of the book. If you spent $30 and just read this one story of the Ecuadorian family and how this guy and his wife at 11,000 feet feed 10 people in the family, it's worth the $30 if that's the price of the book. All right, let me tell you about this again. The price of the book is called Hungry Planet. Write it down. Write it down. Dynamite book. And I didn't think it was going to amount to two hoots in a whirlwind. When I first saw it, I said, I think I'm wasting my time here. But when I got into it, I said, uh-oh, there's something worth it here. Remember, this guy's name now is Peter Menzel, P-E-T-E-R-M-E-N-Z-E-L, and Faith D, apostrophe A-L-U-I-S-I-O, D. Aluzio, copyright 2005, called Hungry Planet. About two-thirds of it is entertainment. And about one-third of it is vital, hard information that's going to benefit you in the Great Tribulation and or Great Famine, wherever you happen to live. I don't care where you live in the world, this book is worth that amount of money, $30. I'm going to guess it's $30. All right, now with that much out of the way, let me find another little story over here for you. I've got about 8 minutes here to kill. So let me take a look here and see what we want to do while I'm flipping around here. Why don't I start off over here with this Mally guy? Mally guy. And then he's going to be, see if I can find Mally in here. And they've got some Asiatics in here that are pretty good. And this guy here. I happen to flip over here to a family here that's living in Japan. Now, these Japanese live pretty well, pretty high on the hog. They've been there in Japan now for thousands of years. The Japanese seem to be survivors. And I don't know how they're going to come through this Great Tribulation. My guess is that 90% of them are going to die. But let me show you what a typical Japanese family they're doing. It's called the Yukitas of Kodiera City. The purchase of a single powdered chocolate truffle at a Japanese department store can cause an amazing flurry of activity. Behold the spectacle of a warping or a wrapping experience with graceful precision. The clerk gently folds the chocolate into a square of tissue paper, tucks it into a tiny box, and then ties it up with an elegant snippet of ribbon. Exquisite entertainment for the price of a piece of candy. But this is no mere show. The belief that the presentation is as important as the food itself extends from the finest department store to the humblest home in Japan. Seiyu Yukita is up early, scrambling eggs and preparing small breakfast salads of artfully placed tomato, cucumber, and lettuce for her daughters. Ignoring this elegant array, her husband grabs a cup of coffee and a cigarette, turns on the television, and immerses himself in the baseball scores and the weather report before walking to the train station. Though Kodera City is a Tokyo suburb, Kazuo will have an hour-long commute into central Tokyo and the book warehouse where he works. The Yukitas own a car, but it's impractical to drive into the city. Both girls slouch over the low table in the living room, sipping cups of tea, as Seiyu serves her breakfast and kneels to eat her own. She has already prepared Maya's two school lunch bento boxes with food she cooked along with last night's dinner. In one, pieces of grilled fish and lightly steamed green beans flank a portion of white rice, all arranged with perfect symmetry. The second box holds four whole strawberries, two red cherries, and thin slices of Fuji apple spread out like a fan. Now, these people take food very seriously, don't they? And as a result of that, they live very well. Looking at the family here, we got one, two, three, four, man and his wife and two daughters. The daughters are about 10 or 12, and the other one looks like 13 or 14, man and his wife here. Well, Seiyu Yukita, 51, and her husband, Casio Yukata 53 with children, Maya 14 and Mio 17. Oh, this girl over here 17, that's a surprise. So they got two teenage daughters, 14 and 17 years old. They spend $317.25 a week on food. He lives in Tokyo, Japan. He lives in a suburb. Works in a bookbindery. So he's not, you know, he's not a big businessman or something like that. Just normal, run-of-the-mill, everyday garden variety family. I do not pick these people as being survivors. Big cities have inherent problems. That is, everybody else is depending upon their food and everything that they use for sustenance to be delivered to them. And Japan's got a big problem because nearly everything, or most of everything, is imported into the country. You've got 100 million people living on a piece of real estate the size of California, and they don't have any land in Japan equal to the land in California to grow things on. And so it's a pretty poor agricultural country. I don't know how they're going to make it, but this family here is not very likely to be a survivor in the Great Tribulation. That's my conclusion based upon what I see here and what I read in the story. Now, it's educational to take a look at a family in Japan, how they live, how they eat. And then you can draw a conclusion from that and ask yourself, is it very likely that these people are going to survive a 90% depopulation of the world over the next 40 years? Now, boys and girls, whether you believe in God or you believe in evolution is irrelevant. I'm simply reporting to you that the powers that be want to reduce the Earth's population. They want to limit population growth. They've already got started in China and a number of countries around the world. It isn't an issue of is it religious or not. It's purely a secular issue. I'm just dropping off onto you the fact that the scripture also confirms the secular prognostication for the next 40 years, and that is God says, I'll save 10% of you alive. So there's the Japanese family. I would say they're toast. You can read the story and come to your own conclusion next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. So I've got to give you a reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school than the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, our time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.